This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with Father Tom Holloway from the Newman Center at the University of Illinois, the Center for Catholic Student Ministry. Welcome, Tom.
Good afternoon.
We're going to talk about Catholic student life, what students are like today, and of course that might be true of people of other faiths as well, students of this generation. How long have you been on campus?
I'm just beginning my fourth year. 3 years ago, I think, maybe this week, that I came down here from Pontiac, which was my first assignment.
Now, you were a parish priest
in
Pontiac?
Mm-hmm.
How long were you there?
I was an assistant there for 3 years.
So that would be a big parish?
About 900 families, a medium-sized parish
medium-sized.
In this part of the country.
Uh-huh. And where were you before Pontiac?
I was locked away in the seminary.
Where?
I went to Mount St. Mary's Seminary in Emmitsburg, Maryland.
We'll get back to your training and preparation and so forth later, but let's jump right into this topic. When mm-hmm. you came to the University of Illinois to work with students, faculty, staff, and so on, what were the big changes for you as a priest in terms of working with today's students?
Well, one is the shift of the clock. You might as well turn it upside down. And people say to me sometimes when you go back and visit the parish, well, do you like it better? They want to know, do you like it better? And I say, well, I'm seldom rested, but I'm never bored.
Okay.
This is one thing.
So you're up late at night.
Yes.
Because that's when students are awake.
That's when they come to life.
Mm-hmm. So tell us what your schedule is. How do you live a life as a campus pastor?
Well, I was accustomed to getting up with the rest of the world, or a good portion of them, at, say, 5 in the morning before and getting right off to it. And when I came here, that gradually got eroded, so I don't usually get up till 7 or 7:30, which would be embarrassing when my confreres hear about it. And I've sort of found that you have to do, if you're going to have some of your life, so to speak, things you need to take care of, prayer time or to exercise or to take care of personal things, that's first thing in the day. Because
students are still asleep anyway.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. If I go do substitution in a parish on a Sunday morning and I say, most of my congregation's not out of bed yet.
Right.
But how
late do you stay up?
Well, sometimes you'll have meetings, official meetings starting at 9 o'clock, going for 3 hours. And there'll be kids who say, can I come see you? And they'll want to meet you at, 10. We have a 9 o'clock mass on some nights of the week, and people will be happy to see you after that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if somebody's in a state where they really need some help, you may be up through part of the night.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, one advantage priests have over Protestant pastors, people of other faiths, is that you're required to be single. And so there's not children waiting for you at home that are missing you or a spouse. Is that a good thing, you think?
In regard to being available to people, that part of celibacy, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. When I was first ordained, I'd asked my pastor if I could, can we have a dog? I'd never had a dog. That was my first home for a long time. He was suspect about it and let me. So I took a foster animal from a shelter for a while and really enjoyed him. He was real good. But what I started to find in a week's time was I'd be walking out the door and he was an Alaskan and he'd be jumping up so excited. I'd say, well, I got to go to the nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd come, I'd walk back, oh, I've got to go to the school. And mm-hmm. you realize, wow, if this is a dog and this is his life and you mm-hmm. can't help him to be happy, what would it be like? It'd be very unfair to mm-hmm. to a spouse or children.
Mm-hmm. So. Right before our program came on tonight, there was a promo for This American Life, which I happened to have heard yesterday when it was on Saturday morning. And it is an interesting program. I encourage listeners who enjoy this program and the issues we deal with on Keeping the Faith to be sure and listen this afternoon at 6 when This American Life is on. They're dealing with various issues of church and state, and they interview many folks as Christians. The one thing I noticed in hearing the program was that the host for the program talks about Christians and says Christians say this and Christians do this and Christians say that. And as a sort of a professional in this field myself, I was thinking, I wish he'd say some Christians or conservative Christians
or
right-wing Christians, because that's the ones he's mainly talking about. How do you deal with that in Catholicism? Because many people think of Catholicism as unified and everyone's following the Pope.
Yeah.
And
I think that's a very good question. I'm glad you asked that, because especially sometimes the way it's portrayed in drama and so on, a picture from outside doesn't show there's a real diversity of ways that people live and what they believe and the way they live that belief inside the church. And that's definitely true on a college campus. And college students are more, I think, more vocal and clear about letting you know that, which is something that's always in the back of your mind when you're preparing for Sunday preaching, for example. If I'm going to have 500 people at the 9 o'clock Mass, you're trying to throw the broadest net where you're not alienating somebody. I mean, somebody else doesn't think that you're soft and that you're speaking to their life experience. Hopefully sure. They're hearing themselves there without just being bland and insipid.
Well, give our listeners and me a sense of the breadth of Catholicism today. I think the first priest I worked with on campus was in North Carolina, and he was he'd grown up in a secular home, and he'd converted to Catholicism, really, and then became a priest. But he says, "I'm an American Catholic." He said, "Don't call me a Roman Catholic." Now, what does that mean?
What does that mean? The college has helped me see this a lot. I think sometimes, and this is just my perspective, I think that Americans, you know, when you grow up and you take in the world around you, think that part of reality, we see it through the lens of the free market economy, that in a sense, everything is my God-given right to pick the one that I like and to choose it, whatever suits me. I think if somebody distinguishes themselves from being Roman Catholic by being American Catholic, maybe they're just being somewhat explicit about that, in that I reserve judgment on things that are allegedly revealed, that I'm going to make the final decision on that. And a lot of times it's whether it's convenient for me, whether it pleases me, if it fits my political ideology, the way that I've come to see life, I'll be the judge of that, sort of, that American reserve.
How much, I'm speaking as an outsider, as a Protestant minister, Presbyterian, but when I hear of various social issues brought that come out, you hear these various Protestant denominations, leaders say various things, and you may hear the Council of Bishops in this country come out on some issue. What does that mean to Catholics? Because I know as a Presbyterian, sometimes I agree with the folks who speak for Presbyterians, sometimes I don't. Do Catholics have that kind of freedom?
Well, you might also say, you know, as a Presbyterian, that there's a lot of people in pews who don't even know that it was said.
That's
and it's
true
not terribly
too, yeah.
important to them. And I think that might be a broad section of, let's say, American Catholics, that they don't even know. What is it that the bishops as a group have taught? And secondly, they might say, well, who cares? Why should I care about that? I guess that's a legitimate question. They deserve a legitimate answer to. How much freedom do they have? Well, it depends on if the teaching is part of the deposit of faith of Catholicism itself and is just being expounded and taught, or is it something that's arisen and we're applying principles to it, and here's the kind of position that they advocate, you know, trying to form consciences. I think there's a bit of latitude. During the time on campus at the beginning of this Iraq war was a good case in point, where we were talking about conscience and the responsibility to form it, but that this isn't a one-size-fits-all issue and that there's a latitude of discussion, for example. And I think there are a lot of issues probably like that.
Sure. We're talking on Keeping the Faith today with Father Tom Holloway from the Newman Foundation, the Center for Catholic Student Life at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. This is a live program, and we are eager to have people join our conversation. If you'd like to give us a phone call in Champaign-Urbana, where the program originates, you may punch in 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, the call letters of the station, of course. Anywhere else the program is heard, including on the Internet, within the continental U.S., you may call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. So if it's a long-distance call for you, do use the 800 number, 1-800-222-WILL. Getting back to Father Tom, and that is what the students call you, I know.
That's what students call me.
They're informal. Do you like that informality on campus?
It's more personal.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It is there's a lot of different settings than I usually find myself in ministry here, where, you know, you can just take a walk with people and just, you know, walk the quiet and talk while you go. Father does sometimes, after 9 o'clock Mass on Sunday, take people out to the bar for a little while, and his clerics. It's sure. It's funny, is when Monsignor Sweatland maybe has been in there with somebody half an hour before, and then here comes the next priest, and he starts, a priest walks into a bar.
But that old story, right? And what... how do students relate to you? Do you say they come to you with questions? Do you feel that you can become friends with students, or do you think you need to have a certain reserve or distance so that you can function also as their counselor, their confessor?
That's an interesting thing about, I'd say, many Catholics of any age, even, you know, people many years my senior. It's just maybe part and parcel of the religious atmosphere they grew up with, where a lot of people will treat you with a deal of deference, even if you are very forthcoming to them. It's a very good question, because with young people, they want you to be in relationship with them. Yet at the same time, they want you to lead them. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't be completely comfortable with you just being their buddy, sure. You know, and that's good. And so it is a funny balance between being friend and being father.
And you're also, if I may say so, young. And closer mm-hmm. to student age than many priests might be.
Sure.
And particularly these days with a shortage of Catholic priests, mm-hmm. I don't know what the average age is of priests in America today, but mm-hmm. You're clearly fairly soon out of seminary. How many years?
Six
years out of seminary. Does that make it easier or harder working with students?
Probably with students, easier. Mm-hmm. Although... There's always a portion who, for example, one of the men that lives with us is Father Victor Mosley, who's a Xavierian missionary. He lived many years in Sierra Leone, and he's a grandfatherly presence. And some people, that's the presence they feel secure with.
Just what they want,
yeah.
Sure.
But other people will seek me out, and couples maybe will seek us out and say, well, we were looking for somebody a little younger. You're a mm-hmm. little closer to our age. They'll mm-hmm. say that.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell our listeners what kind of counseling you tend to do with students. What are the issues that students bring to you as a priest on campus?
Very good. Well, I think there's a broad cross-section of anybody in the believing population of any religion as to where they are with their faith. And I'd say it's a good mix of people wanting spiritual direction. Teach me how to pray. Help me to understand my faith with my mind as well as my heart. Give me moral direction. Help me to have some ground to stand on. What ought I to do? On the other hand, I'll have a whole lot of just, I guess you'd call it pastoral counseling, of people saying, I don't know what I want to do with my life. I need to fix this relationship with my parents. Should I marry this man? Should I marry this woman? Who am I? Mm-hmm. Why am I depressed? Mm-hmm. Why am I empty? Mm-hmm. Why shouldn't I kill myself sometimes? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we call, it's part of the relationship that we have with students, and we say this not sarcastically, call it daddy time, mm-hmm. that sometimes for a college student, this is the first person of adult age who has given them a serious listen, and they found that attention. They want some more of it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes college students are the orphans of living parents, some people. I've been given everything, but what I really want is I want you to love me, I want you to listen to me, I want you to care about me.
Now, as a priest, you're called father. That's the appropriate term. Mm-hmm. But do you ever worry about replacing a biological father?
You can't replace family relationship. And there are people maybe sometimes who might like you to do that. And when you sense that that's the case, I think it's important to help them get down into their own heart and say, why is it that this relationship is broken for you, and what might God want to do about it in your life? What are the things that are hurting that he may want to get at so that you can be in right relationship with your own family? And we've seen a lot of beautiful things that way too.
Now, on a campus, there are often representatives of many religious faiths.
Mm-hmm.
Professional folks near this campus, also, of course, different professors, other students
yes.
that have very different views. How do you, How do you encourage Catholic students to deal with those kind of relationships and things that they're hearing and learning?
That's good. That's a lot of what people want to ask about. Maybe for somebody who came from a very homogenous background or went through Catholic schools their whole life and never experienced anything that was racially different, religiously different, ideologically different, they can really be thrown for a loop. And then they begin to ask themselves as late adolescents, why do we believe what we believe? You want to teach people not – you don't have to be threatened because somebody's different than you. You'll get a lot more mileage out of listening to people and really understanding them, and then bring it back and ask yourself, okay, why do we believe what we believe? And take that back to a dialogue of friendship.
Do you encourage Catholic students to take courses for credit in, say, Islam or Buddhism or Judaism?
I don't know that not by any judgment position. I don't know that they actively encourage people to do so, but it certainly wouldn't discourage people from doing so. And a lot of times they're bringing back what they're learning in class, whether it's religious in nature or just their regular curriculum, saying, you know, what is this, how does this interact with my faith? Where do I go from here?
You mentioned that students are at this stage where they're curious, they're exploring, they're asking questions about their own faith and their own spirituality to you as a religious spiritual advisor. What is your goal for them by the time they leave here?
That's a great question. What I hope my goal is in my whole life and whatever I do in this priesthood is to build something that outlasts me. I think the most I can do here is through an openness of spiritual friendship to give people tools that are time-tested to discovering how they pray, how they hear God, who they are, discovering what is God calling in their life for them to do. I would say to anybody entering spiritual direction, you know, the goal of this is not to make you a copy of me. The goal of this is to help you discover how does God talk to you and so that you can carry that relationship on for the rest of your life when I'm long gone.
Do you think that the Catholic faith provides all the resources necessary to deal with all the problems you encounter with students? Or are there sometimes you refer someone, say, to a counseling center or a psychologist or psychiatrist?
Good question, and maybe two-part answer. One, the Catholic faith does not have all of the resources that that one needs to deal with all the things that life throws at you. That's why we're a community, and that's why you try to have a holistic life. So secondly, I would say I do frequently refer people. A lot of times people want a spiritual solution to a problem that's not a spiritual problem. Obviously, we're spiritual people, we're physical people, we're psychological people. Mm-hmm. I'm not dividing people up, but sometimes people are comfortable in the milieu of faith, but don't want to approach the idea that maybe I need to talk to a professional, maybe I need some counseling because I've got some things to work out. Mm-hmm. Maybe there are some things wrong with my body that a physician may need help to assess and help make right so that I can feel okay and live to the most of my potential. There's a pretty strong stigma for many kids there.
Sure.
Yeah.
And sometimes when there's a depression, there's a chemical imbalance that
certainly
can be dealt with that can help with that.
Yeah.
Sure. We're talking on Keeping the Faith today with Father Tom Holloway from the Newman Center, the Newman Foundation on campus in St. John's Catholic Chapel. He's one of the priests there. How many priests are there at Newman?
I always say it depends what day it is. There are three of us who are priests of this diocese. There are two priests who are from Tanzania. They are students in advanced degrees, education and mathematics. This summer, one of their diocesan brother priests is with us in the United States because they do mission appeals for their home during the summer. Hmm. I mentioned Father Victor Mosley, the missionary who's in residence from his community. And just shortly will be joining us Monsignor Albert Hallin, who has been the pastor of Holy Cross Parish these several years. He's in partial retirement as well as the pastor of Bongard south of here, and he'll be another grandfatherly presence and bringing his wisdom and teaching as well.
Hmm. And who else besides priest is part of sort of the ministry team? Because I know you have
Very
many
good
Catholic students.
Sure. We have about 70 staff, and certainly not all of them are pastoral, but there are two sisters who are members of the Heading Avenue Franciscans from Peoria.
Now tell folks who may not know what a sister is today.
Well, and that depends on what the apostolate or the charism of their community is. These are nuns of various ways of life. The Heading Avenue Franciscans have always had a fairly active apostolate in teaching and they're going into home health care. Have been in elderly health care before now. So Sister Janice Keenan runs our chapel office, but she's moved into a lot more pastoral counseling. Sister Anna Flanagan, very dynamic lady in her own right, heading up our service and justice outreaches, you know, just very much a concern for the needy and teaching students to take on those missions in life. On the other hand, we have had until recently three and sometimes four members of a community called the Apostles of the Interior Life, sisters from Italy, young nuns whose apostolate is spiritual direction and formation of the laity, and in this particular case of college students. We also are looking at hiring some lay staff for pastoral counseling, since we won't have the help of the apostles during this coming school year. They've gone to Wisconsin to begin apostolate up there. Mm-hmm. But there's sometimes sometimes when the priests, who I call the guys in the trenches, who are in the parish slugging it out, saying 4, 5, 6 masses a weekend, taking care of 3 or 4 parishes sometimes, and they hear, oh, St. John's in Champaign has 4 priests, 5 priests, 6 right. priests. Mm-hmm. I've been on both sides of that fence. And I say, I know I'm working 3 times harder here than I did when I had 3 parishes before, just because of the nature of the place. But we could have 12 priests and 25 sisters, and wouldn't that be great? There would still be an infinite amount of need. I mean people are hungry for mm-hmm. this, for that, whether it's for help or whether it's for growth. We could be busy. You can be as busy as you want to be.
Now, in terms of your sense of your calling in this place and your personal mission in this place, is part of it evangelism to bring new people into the Catholic faith, or only to sustain and help grow those who are already Catholics?
I've been reflecting on this recently, in part because I think part of what you have to do in this kind of setting is to lead leaders. There are still going to be a lot of times when this is a lot of what my time is used for, when you're one-on-one dealing with a person for their own sake. But you could really multiply the good that is done if you can teach people how to teach people, or if you can lead people in learning how to lead people and multiply the effort. It's not just a clerical, top-down kind of ministry. There's more to say there. I think maybe I went off your question.
Is part of one of the things you're training students to do as enabling them to be leaders to also be evangelists, or is it just to worry about their own spiritual growth?
Well, I guess or maybe what I started to say was I find myself in the position of responding because there is so much need. But I'm really glad that we have groups like we have a group called the Fellowship of Catholic University Students, a national group of college peer-based Bible study evangelists. We've given a lot of missionaries to them. They take 2 years of their life. They raise their own funds in order to live with college students and lead small group Bible studies and do that kind of thing.
How many of those students are here?
There are 4.
On U of I campus?
On the U of I campus, sure. Uh-huh. 2 men and 2 women. I find that the best platform that I have for outright evangelism is the number of minutes that people will listen to me on a Sunday, because mm-hmm. mostly where I encounter most Catholics. Mm-hmm. Then they begin to come, call, email, mm-hmm. show up and say, this is the phrase, can I talk to you? Mm-hmm. Yes, you can talk to me.
Now, you know well that many Protestant groups consider Catholics targets for evangelism to convert them to Protestantism.
Sure.
Do Catholics also see Protestants as targets?
I hope It's a good loaded question, Steve. My mouth wants to say, I hope in a benevolent way, but I'm sure that anybody of another Christian denomination thinks that, yeah, well, that's how I see you too, because I want to win you for Christ. Mm-hmm. What we try very much to do is to train our students to understand their own faith so that they can hear those things and hopefully not be reactionary to them, but help to clarify sometimes what hasn't been understood about Catholicism, even by Catholics sometimes. I got to tell you, we have about 40 people each year who, during Easter time, join the Catholic faith after about a year of investigation and learning.
How many Catholic students are there at U of I, roughly?
Ostensibly, maybe 20% of our population even is nominally Catholic.
Okay.
How many actually come to church? Not 20% of our population.
I understand. That's true of Protestants as well. And I've heard that's also true from Hillel for Jewish students. I don't know about the mosque, but
it's probably it's the nature of late adolescence where people wander for a while. They're learning new things, trying new things. And it's amazing to maybe even cause them a bit of chagrin that many people eventually come home because that's where they find their hearts are, the way that they first learned how to know God, whether it's in college or later.
We're talking with Father Tom Holloway here on Keeping the Faith. If you'd like to ask him a question or make a comment about some of the things that he's said on this program, you do have the opportunity by telephone. Anywhere the program is heard, including on the Internet, you may call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. So if it's a long-distance call, do use the 800 number 222-WILL in Champaign-Urbana to help listeners locally. There are several lines you can access by punching in 333-9455. So even if you hear someone on the line talking with us, if you're making a local call, punch in anyway and we'll put you in line. 333-WILL. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs every Sunday night from 5 to 6 here on WILL, AM 580. I want to thank the guest hosts that helped me out the last 4 weeks in a row when I was traveling and going to conferences and had some conflicts. And Don Nolan was very kind, and three of those Sundays was the guest host. Don is an emeritus professor of religion at Parkland College. The other Sunday I was gone, my colleague at the University of YMCA, Becca Nieto, communications master's graduate from the University of Illinois, was our guest host, and I want to thank them for filling in. They were volunteers doing that, as I am on this program, and we're happy to. I'm happy that they were able to fill in and help out. Coming up in the next couple of weeks here on this program, Gary Olson will be our guest June 12. He'll be talking about a very interesting program that tries to respond to disasters worldwide, natural disasters as well as places where there are war that creates refugees. People who find themselves homeless have found a very good use of something called shelter boxes, ways that people can provide a place for people to stay in safety. Even in very cold weather. And Gary Olson is a local architect, and he's gotten involved in this project and will be talking with us about that. So that's June 12th. June 19th, our guest will be a representative from Bread for the World, talking about one of their programs called The Power of One, O-N-E. And Varghese will be our guest. Then June 26th, Mark Leff and Kevin Sandifer will be our guests on Keeping the Faith, talking about saving Social Security. And then the director of the Jewish Federation, Lee Malhado, will be our guest July 3rd, talking about various Jewish traditions. So those are some of the guests coming up. People who listen to this program also might have a particular interest in several programs coming up on Focus 580 this coming week. That's a program here on AM 580 at either 10 or 11 o'clock Monday through Friday. And on Monday, the 6th of June, Roadside Religion, In Search of the Sacred, the Strange, and the Substance of Faith will be the topic. Professor Timothy Beal from Case Western Reserve will be David Inge's guest on the 11 o'clock program on Monday. And then two more programs that David has scheduled this week, God and the Gavel, Religion and the Rule of Law, at 11 o'clock this Thursday. Marcia Hamilton, a constitutional law scholar from Yeshiva University, will be David's guest by phone. That's Thursday at 11 o'clock, Religion and the Rule of Law. And then Friday at 10, David will be talking with Stephen Monsma from Calvin College about faith-based initiatives, nonprofit organizations, and public money. That's also a topic of This American Life, which follows this program at 6 p.m. this Sunday night. They'll be dealing with some of those same issues. And again, my only caution is when the host says Christians, please think only some Christians. Not all Christians take the same view as some of the people he's interviewing. Okay, well, let me just say a word about the University YMCA, which is helps provide support for this program each week. I'm the director of the Y, and it's the oldest Christian ministry on this campus. It was started 132 years ago here, and over that long span of time has started many programs which have been helpful to students as well as university staff and faculty. Some of those programs are Friday Forum and Know Your University and a non-credit set of courses called Communiversity. The summer Communiversity classes will be starting soon, and if you'd like to learn about various opportunities for learning how to dance, doing certain projects like learning photography or martial arts or how to give a massage to your best friend, the various classes are very inexpensive at the University Y. Here in Champaign, and you may give us a call at 337-1500 during the week, and we'll send you a catalog, or you can pick them up at many public places throughout the town, libraries, and so forth, or you may check online. Our website is universityymca.org. Let's see, one last thing about the Y. One of the ways the Y survives as a nonprofit organization is by donations from friends and supporters. We receive no government money and no money from the university budget. We are an independent nonprofit organization, open to people of any religious faith or none. But some people have been donating vehicles to us, and we had our first boat donated this last couple weeks. We have a 12-foot sailboat and trailer. Anybody interested in looking at that may drive by the Y at 1001 South Wright Street. That's being offered for $900. We also have a big conversion van that seats seven, a wonderful, wonderful van, only 5 years old. If you're interested in that, come by or give me a call, Steve Shoemaker, 337-1500. So you see, some pastors even turn out to be used car salesmen.
I think that it's great that a religious organization has a conversion van.
That's right.
You can do mobile ministry that way.
And for those who are interested, our dump and run program at the Y has still been collecting things, but we need to not take anything very much anymore. Until one particular date in July, and I can't tell you what that date is at the moment. Ah, here it is, July 10. Saturday, July 10, we'll be accepting other things for the big recycling program of household items and furniture and things like that. Well, let's get back to our guest, Tom Holloway, who's been patiently waiting. And let me encourage phone calls. If you'd like to ask Father Tom a question or make a comment, 333-9455 locally or 1-800-222-9455. Tom, we're talking about Catholic students' life today and what issues students face. You talked about the kind of spiritual questions students have, family questions about family relations, boyfriend, girlfriend issues, who to marry, all those kind of things. What's the most painful thing that you personally have to deal with when students come to you?
I'd say it is when a student is experiencing a period of depression, mm-hmm. and they don't know what depression is. Mm-hmm. For a person who, no matter what, they may have tried this and tried that, they, from their perspective, and just don't know how to feel. Mm-hmm. I mean, feel anything. Mm-hmm. Don't know how to care about themselves. Don't have anything that seems to matter. And oftentimes when people are just thinking, I don't want to live like this, mm-hmm. and are entertaining those notions, because depression is not something where you wave some wand over people or you just give them just the right scripture verse and suddenly everything will be all right. It's a combination of parts of the person that are hurting there. And sometimes for a person to be able to step outside of themselves and to see that and entertain that notion so that they might get help is a big step for some people. Mm-hmm. When they think, no, it's just me. Mm-hmm. I'm just messed up. And when you know you can't fix people, as you probably well know from a lot of pastoral counseling, none of us can fix each other. Mm-hmm. You can love people. You can walk with them. You can maybe give them some things to consider they didn't know before. You can point them in good directions. But ultimately, people are free, hopefully. And when you just see somebody hurt that you think could be doing better or who just doesn't know how to plug into that, that's really hard, especially when you worry about them for their well-being.
If that's your greatest pain personally when in your professional work, what's your greatest joy?
You know, a little while ago we were talking about just the conversation was going the way of the things that students deal with and the problems they have and sometimes the needs. But, you know, one of the things I love about college ministry is when people get it, when they get the gospel, when they believe in something, they run with it. There's a time in their life when they're very impassioned. And when a student just falls in love with God and runs with it, and you just get to stand back and watch it happen, it's a really beautiful thing. Mm. Our students are the best evangelists. You know, I can't tell you the number of people who may say, you know, in the sacramental context, bless me, Father, for I've sinned. I have no idea when my last confession was. Maybe when I was my first communion, you know. And I'll ask for permission. May I ask you a question? Uh-huh. And they say yes. And I'll say, what's God doing in your life that's bringing you here now? And they'll say, well, my friend outside, they bring each other home. They are the living proof to each other that, you know what, God loves you and so do I. And they can put a face on the things that they're hearing. They teach each other how to pray. They bring each other to student groups and fellowship. They provide alternatives. Here's something you can do if you don't want to be part of the life that you've been living for a while anymore. Just when the Lord is doing His thing in them and they become joyful and they're transformed, it's a really beautiful thing to see. And it's a privilege to see that.
When Protestants first came to this country, it was several decades before very many Catholics came. And Catholics were considered a very small minority and often were discriminated against, persecuted, had trouble finding decent jobs, getting a good education. And particularly in the Midwest, when Protestants came out here, it was even longer before very many Catholics were here. Did you grow up Catholic? Were these kind of stories part of what you heard growing up?
I didn't learn about the history of anti-Catholicism until my theological training.
Really?
Later on.
Uh-huh.
I grew up in a small town in northeastern Indiana, Angola, Indiana.
Okay.
A town obviously with very many different churches. And
was your family Catholic?
My mother raised us Catholic.
Okay.
My mom was, yeah. Uh-huh. And just something I don't know. It wasn't on my radar until later on.
Hmm. Did you go to parochial schools?
We didn't have them. So, in fact, I say sometimes when I'm preaching, I'll say, how many people went to Catholic school? And I'll raise their hands and I say, well, my condolences. And they laugh. And I'll say, well, congratulations, you're still here. Mm-hmm. Catholic school tends to be sometimes graduation from the Catholic faith for young people.
Why is that?
Why is that? I think sometimes it's because you have to wear this uniform. You have to undergo this discipline. Mm-hmm. You have to study religion as a subject. Uh-huh. You have to be tested over it. Uh-huh. Depends what the attitude of your teachers was. And you finally get to a point in adolescence where you say, I don't have to do this anymore. Thank God.
Mm-hmm. So it's that independent stage that people go through, or that questioning stage.
I think when it's just a something you must do, it becomes a burden and annoying to kids, and so they walk away for a while sometimes. Mm-hmm. But equally here, I have a lot of young people who really credit their Catholic education and the people that formed them for the strong faith that they have. So it works both ways.
Did you have many brothers and sisters?
I have one sister and one brother,
one
both
sister,
younger.
One mm-hmm. brother. Where did you go to college?
I started at the University of South Carolina. Hmm. And I was studying psychology for the reason that I had hoped to go to Covenant House, which is a series of runaway shelters and hopefully help programs in the U.S. But I was 20 at the time, and they wanted you to be 22. And I thought, well, I might as well do something that would be useful toward that in the meantime. I studied psychology for a year. And at the end of it, I moved back to Indiana because I wanted to play rock and roll with my friends. And I felt like, I already know all the stuff they're telling me. They're just charging me a lot of money to put good names on it. And it didn't have a lot of room for God in the way in which it was being taught to me. It was in that interim time when I began to feel strongly about a call toward the priestly vocation. And when I went back to school, I went to the Franciscan University of Steubenville in Ohio to finish my undergrad there in philosophy.
And then you went directly into seminary?
Directly into seminary.
How many years in seminary?
Seminary for me was 4 years. They call it grad school, I guess, and then some. Mm-hmm. I joined the Diocese of Peoria while I was in college when I became aware of it.
You have a choice about what diocese you join?
You do now. I think in the old law and former days that you had to, if you were seeking ordination, you had to do so for the place in which you live geographically. But mm-hmm. I think now you have the freedom to approach a diocese and obviously religious life, which would be the religious orders that people are familiar with, Franciscans or Dominicans, Jesuits, etc., as a separate matter. Mm-hmm. But a diocese is a geographical region
yes.
of governance of the Catholic faith.
We have a caller waiting on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I'm curious, have either of you had to deal with suicide prevention on an individual basis? Am I question clear?
Yes, thanks. That's a very good question. And I was hoping somebody might, in fact. I have personally, yeah, whether it's by telephone, whether it's going to someone's home and doing an intervention here on campus, sometimes by being called, pastoral staff, please come up to this floor immediately. Somebody's on the phone with a relative and is, you know, attempting suicide and interrupting that. Unfortunately, we did have this year one of our students who did take his own life, which was a very devastating experience for the community. But I have to say, I have never been more proud of them than during that very strange and painful time for the way that they pulled together and loved each other and grieved together. And I know that that young man's family who came here was profoundly touched by the response they received, just an outpouring of love from the students. It's a scary thing.
It is. Now, you'd studied psychology as an undergraduate, and of course you had pastoral counseling courses in seminary and grad school as
yes.
well. So you have training in how to deal with people who are facing that kind of circumstance, but you also feel free, I'm sure, to refer someone where you feel it's helpful for them to see a psychiatrist
sure.
or whatever. And the counseling center here at the university has a very good suicide intervention response team.
Yes, and the university's been very very good in following up with our community, helping us walk through an experience that we had not had.
Mm-hmm. Since it is a state government institution, the University of Illinois, of course, there is a separation from church and state, from religion and the university. But the university realizes that many people at this university are themselves religious, mm-hmm. and there are some resources available in almost every religious tradition if it seems helpful. So we also get referrals the other direction from
yes.
university faculty, staff, counseling center, when they feel it's helpful for someone to, okay, you're Mormon, let's call in someone from your faith tradition to help
sure.
be helpful at this time. We have another caller waiting online too. Thank you for your patience.
Yes, concerning your earlier comment about the Iraq War. In fact, the late Pope, John Paul II, made it unequivocally clear that the Iraq War was completely immoral. He made numerous statements against this war publicly. He publicly stated that it violated the Christian doctrine, not just the Catholic doctrine, but the Christian doctrine of just war. In fact, the Pope felt so strongly about this war that he sent his personal emissary, Cardinal Laghi, to meet personally with President Bush and tell President Bush not to go to war, that the war is illegal, that it would be immoral, and that if he went to war, he would go, quote, without God, unquote. Now, that is incredibly powerful language. Obviously, the Pope can't tell Bush that he'd go to hell if he went to war. That's not for the Pope to decide. But he went up to that line. Unfortunately, we have heard nothing from the American Catholic hierarchy that has the courage, the integrity, and the principles that the late Pope John Paul II had on this war. Indeed, I think the Pope completely pulled the rug out from any Catholic to support this war, which is still ongoing. Over 1,700 American soldiers have been killed, if you believe the lies told by the Pentagon. Over 100,000 Iraqis are dead. And yet all we hear is a deafening silence from the American cardinals and the bishops and the priests. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor, for your call.
So, Father Tom, as a priest in the American Catholic Church, how do you feel about the war and what the Pope has said and what at least the caller says, the silence from the American hierarchy?
I think that stated in an absolute way isn't really tenable, though I haven't prepared comments on the topic and don't have the quotes of our bishops in front of me. But I recall that on the days leading to the war, when we were teaching and putting forward the words not only of the Holy Father but of the joint statement of the United States bishops, this is what we got the most flack about from our student body and from some of our professors, obviously not the caller. I don't think it's fair to say that they've been resoundingly silent, but I think they also recognize that it seems to me that there were, at least in the public religious debate forum, even within the church, that there were some margin for things that we did not know then. Now, the question that Steve asked me is, what are your feelings in us? And I say, I stood with the church and I thought what the church was saying, because it seemed to me very clear. We can't do this. We can't do this. Maybe the perspective that I'm coming from right now is, and maybe it is what the caller's experienced from the pulpit, is not a pro-war sentiment or an indifference, but rather the recognition that we are there. Even in February of 2003, we're there. This wrong thing has happened. This is an immoral war, and it's not justified. But now it's disrupted the lives of millions of people, and we're immersed in it. A bad thing has happened that you can't undo, no matter what the bumper stickers around Champaign-Urbana say. If we were to pull everybody out tomorrow, I think we'd do them – and I think the church has come afterwards and said you do them an incredible injustice and harm as well. So given a bad situation, let's not make it worse, and if possible, make it better. What good may come from an evil that ought not to have happened? Maybe it is that the caller and others – would like this to be a continual refrain from the pulpit. I suppose that the difference is from the pulpit, I don't know, is it that we want minds to be changed that aren't already changed? Is it that we want certain people to be condemned? I'm not sure exactly what it is, other than we pray without, you know, blurring the distinction, saying, well, this is a good thing now that we're doing it. It's not. But to pray for the innocent, to pray for the guilty, to pray for our soldiers, to prevent the loss of life for a fledgling government, now looking at the unfortunate way that it came about, that it might have stability, that it might be do good for people, that they may be able to determine their own course from this point onward. I think the point is well taken and well made by the caller, and maybe that bears further reflection on what ought to be said towards what practical ends at this time and in the future.
Mm-hmm. Are there conflicts between different political perspectives within the Catholic Church in terms of, I mean,
we're just one big happy family.
Well, I know I'm asking a silly question, it seems, but you know, traditionally Catholics were Democrats.
Sure.
And how many Catholics now are Republicans? Do you have any sense of the percentages?
I do not know. If Monsignor were here, see where last week he could probably whip it off the top of his pointy little head. I don't know the precise answer to that question, okay. But I think it is fairly split, in part because an immigrant church has become a mainstream people, and they've become more American than Catholic, and they feel, their issues aren't necessarily universal issues within the church anymore. Uh-huh. Maybe divided along the lines of wealth, which Catholics formerly didn't have, uh-huh. and I guess what they hold as their values in this country.
Mm-hmm. We're down to the last 8 or so minutes of this program. We could slip in another call or two if people hurry. The phone numbers are 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, 1-800-222-9455. And let me remind people, if you're traveling or move elsewhere and still want to hear this program or others here on AM 580, you may go to your computer and punch in www.will.uiuc.edu, and then AM 580, and then Keeping the Faith. And our programs are archived there. So if you missed a program or only heard part of this one and would like to hear the rest, wait a week or two, and it'll be on the available through your computer. So that's will.uiuc.edu. Well, we're talking about some controversial issues. Let's follow up with that for at least another minute or two. What are the Catholic teachings that come officially from the bishops, from the cardinals, from the College of Cardinals, from the Pope, which are most troublesome for Catholic students these days?
Good question, Steve. It's not matters of faith. It's matters of morals which flow from the faith. Mm-hmm. With what God tells us it means to be human and the principles that derive from right reason that we apply to that. So for college students, we're talking about Generation Y, at least as far as the undergraduate students go, mm-hmm. sure, which is probably the first generation to be raised in what I would call a totally postmodern worldview. Now, obviously, people, whatever values, you know, or things they grew up with are going to be individual. But by and large, the culture just says there's nothing at the center of human life. It's not even man. It's not God. It's whatever might be the motto of a generation, whatever. So therefore, the notion that what you do with your body, what you do matters, that it makes you what you are, primarily matters of sexual morality. It's a huge issue. It always has been for the late adolescent period, regardless of the period in which they grow up. The notion of chastity and sex being reserved to marriage, all this is something that many students embrace and just have a lot of difficulty living out. It's troublesome to them. Beyond that, certainly the issues of contraception, political issue of abortion and human life issues like stem cell research and in vitro fertilization, et cetera, particularly at a university that has a very strong scientific base. What people learn and is interesting thing about a university community I've noticed over time is, well, people consider themselves I'm an expert at one thing, therefore I must be an expert at all things and bring those things to the table sometimes. Homosexuality and same-sex relationships and the notion of same-sex marriage, because these are things that are part of classroom debate, part of campus forum, part of other student organizations. These are the kind of things that push people's buttons one way or the other, and actually on both sides of that fence.
Mm-hmm. When somebody like Sister Joan Chittister speaks on an issue of the war or about these sexual moral issues that you talk about in the national media, she's on the far left end of the American Catholic Church. How do other Catholics respond when people like that are interviewed on NPR as a spokesperson for this part of the Catholic Church, at least?
if you're driving, you try not to drive off the left side of the road, hopefully. you know what? How do I respond? Sometimes I just I have to turn it off because I'm losing charity. One, because I don't have a call-in to Sister Chittister to respond to her. That infuriates me about the editorial page or our campus newspaper, for goodness sake, where you don't have the opportunity to sit down here to call in and say, let me respond to the things that you're alleging or to bring up the salient points that you neglect to mention conveniently. How do Catholics respond? A lot of them roll their eyes if they I don't know, hold to the faith. Other people maybe who are more formed and in agreement say, well, this just, you know, this then it's compatible. They think that this makes this compatible, you know, because someone who's Catholic has said it. Sometimes the newspapers will go to Professor McBrien or Andrew Greeley whenever they want to quote. And one of my friends once called some of these guys the Billy Ray Cyrus of Catholicism, as if he were the representative of what country music is all about, just because he's so well known. But back in the day, I think, like you pointed out initially, there's a very broad spectrum of what people consider it means to be Catholic. Then there's the deposit of the Catholic faith, and I think in America especially, those things don't always line up. Can you beat people with a stick or argue them into the faith? No. Hopefully you give people a respectful listening and you listen to the goods that they're really getting at, because that underlies whatever someone believes, and enter into hopefully a fruitful dialogue, not just a head-bashing contest with other people.
In our last minute, a very personal question. Do you still like rock and roll?
I was listening to it on the way over here.
Who are some of your favorite groups?
I like to listen to the local station, WPGU, because they don't have a format. They just choose music that they like and music you might not hear. I think my favorite voice of American music is actually Miss Amy Lou Harris. She's the sound of American music to me as I get older and mellower. roots music.
We've been talking today on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Father Tom Holloway, one of the priests at the Newman Center and St. John's Catholic Chapel here at the University of Illinois. I want to thank him and our callers for answering all of these strange questions and being so open and helpful in his answers. Coming up on Keeping the Faith next week, our guest will be an architect, Gary Olson, who is very interested in finding ways to provide emergency shelter for people when there's been a worldwide disaster, either a natural disaster or as a result of war. On June 19, our guest will be Anne Varghese from Bread for the World, a international program that deals with world hunger, talking about a new project of Bread for the World called The Power of One. On June 26, we have two guests, Mark Leff and Kevin Sandifer, will be in the studio talking about their concern with saving Social Security, given some of the many proposals about changes in Social Security these days. July 3rd, from the Jewish Federation, the Executive Director Lee Melhado will be our guest. She will be talking about various Jewish traditions. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. It's good to be back in the studio interviewing folks and dealing with callers. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith. Please listen to This American Life, which follows.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Kayfabe is an old carny term for fakery. Now it's the code of honor for professional wrestling. Kayfabe means you never, ever admit to anyone under any circumstances that pro wrestling's fake. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on the Peabody Award-winning program, To the Best of Our Knowledge, The Spectacle of Professional Wrestling. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. Programming on WILL is funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, offering automotive repair on cars and trucks by ASE-certified technicians. In business since 1984, they perform computerized engine diagnostics, alignments, brake and suspension work, and other repairs. A shuttle service for customers is also available. The phone number for TK Service is 344-0800 or on the web at tkservicecenter.com.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The low in the upper 60s with southwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a high in the upper 80s and west winds around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-60s and southwest winds around 10 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next.